Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham flick, and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. It's been a while, guys. Pandemics and just generally the world going to hell have put the season on hold, and Wheeler Dealer Radio took a break. Things have changed a little bit since we last talked to you, not just in the world around us, but on this podcast. But we have a regular crew with us today, with fireworks in the background of everyone's recording, so you'll have to bear with us if you hear that. But yeah, let's start off. Ben, how have you been spending your quarantine?
Getting swole.
Getting swole, is that what you've been doing?
Yeah. I got some 15-pound free weights, and boy, I'm just going to town on those bad boys. I don't know. I drink a lot.
No, I said since quarantine, Ben. You continued to do?
Well, before I was like into mixology, and now I drink a lot.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's good.
Before I could delude myself that my alcoholism was like a really cute hobby, where like I learned how to make cocktails and it was fancy, and now I'm just pulling vodka out of the bottle.
Okay.
But, we're all doing the best we can. But those 15s, man, they're really cutting back the calories.
Free weights and vodka. You might not be living in Florida like Brian, but you're living that Florida lifestyle.
Yeah, I don't want it to end, frankly.
Brian, how are you doing down in Florida? You have ready and able to get supplies of cocaine?
Yeah, obviously, and constantly staying one alligator apart from all people, which is difficult.
Do they actually say that down there?
There are signs, literally. There are signs that, like, social distancing, 6 feet apart, like one alligator apart. Like, seriously, that's a real thing. That's pretty much it. Just social distancing, finding, Instacart ways to, correspond with your various runners, if you know what I mean. And, it's been in the time of change for the supply chain down here, but I think we've adapted. It's good.
Lots of Florida men finding new ways to put their talents to use.
Florida man. Okay, what about you? Anything new with you?
Well, I got into wine. That's been fun. And also I had a child. So that's been a little different. It's actually, in a weird way, I feel like I'm very built for quarantine because I'm not missing out on anything because I wouldn't be going out and having a social life anyway. So I do what all new parents do. I sit inside and I drink and I have a regular sleep. So so that's good. His name is Brooks. He sat through his first Tottenham game the other day. He slept through all of it and woke up just in time for us to concede and watched us not score a goal for 10 minutes. And then he pooped. So I feel like he's already getting the Tottenham experience down at a month old.
I really feel like what you just told us is that your child's a bad luck charm.
Almost certainly. The problem with that logic at Brian is it's Tottenham Hotspur, and that's still a better performance than we've seen for most of the season. So
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah, he was in utero, so he's been a bad luck charm since he started gestating.
Yeah. If we lose to West Ham, I think you should consider donating him. Or whatever.
I think I just have to legally change his name to Andre Villas, my last name.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. Andre Villas Chirpy. It'd be great.
He'll just instantly grow a beard. His hair will get much wavier. It'll be a really bad idea. He is asleep right now, which is merciful. So we can talk about just a really fun and super light topic, which is, Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. We are coming off our first game back from the pandemic break, which was a 1-1 draw against Manchester United. And I'll start this out before we get into the game. I think we talked about this a little bit when the pandemic started, and we didn't know exactly how long this was going to last. But I'll say this, like, for the rest of the year, like, I think the pandemic honestly saved Tottenham Hotspur from some truly horrendous performances, because that team was, there was nobody left when we went into quarantine. And at least, apparently we still don't have enough players to put a midfield together, but at least we could field, like, something resembling an attack. What?
I said, at least Sissoko's back.
Yes, there you go.
It like a joke, but he was actually really good.
No, I mean that sincerely.
Well, and
I would think like Harry and Son being fit again would have been a difference maker. But
Bergwijn being back was a big difference. I mean, he looked great. I mean, I just think we would have seen some truly dire shit without a like 3 month break, and at least we could field something
instead,
resembling the first team.
Some truly dire shit.
But, there's another player who apparently has been getting swole during quarantine, because Eric Dier is, I mean, that was probably the best performance he's had in like a year, 2 years. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's take this from the top rather than going all ass backwards.
Sure. No, Ben, we're coming back in midseason form. All right. So let's talk about the last 10 minutes and then we'll work our way to the beginning of the game.
Yeah. Why start having structure now?
Exactly. So I don't know, but I mean, let's
jog around midfield for
exactly.
Since, and rarely fourth into the box.
A big empty space where there's nothing there and just a void of what should be there. But I don't know, Ben, like overall, like I said, we were watching some pretty dire football out of Tottenham when this quarantine started. What was your sort of overall impression of the performance we saw against Manchester United?
I mean, honestly, that's the worst part, is that the overall performance was not so bad. You know, Man U had been in pretty good form going into the break. Pogba's back. He didn't start, but he came on and made a difference. Bruno Fernandes has been really good for them lately. They got Rashford back fit as well. You know, they had a solid lineup out there, and I would have expected them to really run over us, especially given where we'd been. But by and large, I mean, the first half, we were very comfortable. We limited Man U to very few chances. We had some trouble actually breaking because Harry Kane is insipid. But... you know,
I would agree. I think we were definitely, our chances were a lot more dangerous. I mean, obviously we scored an actual goal, but I think in the first half in particular, we looked much more dangerous than United did.
I mean, Lamella looked very industrious. He was kind of like the outlet pass every time we tried to counter, and you know, he did a really good job of like, he'd shrug a challenge, dribble a little bit, and try and find a pass, and only sometimes found that pass, because let's be honest, it is Eric Lamella. As much as we love him, that's what we're gonna get. But when he did find the pass, you know, we looked legitimately threatening. Sonny and Bergwijn in particular looked dangerous on the break. You know, we created a couple chances, and then Bergwijn really pulled one out of nowhere to take the lead.
We piled some pressure on there. I thought, Son had a hell of a header that really forced De Gea into a pretty good save, actually. You know, I thought they did a really good job putting the pressure on United. I mean, you know, that's what we do. We put the pressure on.
Well, and I think, I mean, it was especially impressive because probably, like, the first 10 minutes, it didn't kind of look like we were going to have a foothold. Like, we kind of started with a weird lineup, like that we all had questions, like, why is it Dier and Sanchez in defense? Why isn't Alderweireld playing? You know, you lose Lucas kind of, I guess, in the warm-ups before the match. And so, you know, it took a little while for it to look like anything. But then once the game kind of got going, you know, you saw that the midfields, you know, sort of went back to working the way it had under Pochettino with Winks and Sissoko. You saw that Lamella was acting like the link between midfield and, you know, I guess what was our attacking band. And then, you know, you saw that what Jose wants to do, which was use the quick wingers on the outside in Bergwijn and Son to, you know, get up the field and create chances and put pressure on defenses. And I thought for the last, you know, 25, 30 minutes of the half, it really worked actually pretty well.
Was this Mourinho's most tactically coherent game as Spurs manager? I mean, I know that's a low bar, but...
Well, again, we've never really managed to put together 90 minutes, do we? I would say the first half was very well executed in terms of we had a game plan, we kept things tight. Sissoko and Winks sat very deep in front of the back line. Sissoko was breaking up lots of shit. Winks was recycling the ball. You know, the plan was, like, keep shit tight, get it to the attacking midfield band, and let them run. And we did that very well in the first half. And then it all fell apart when Man U realized they could make subs, and Jose Mourinho did not. I mean, when they brought on Pogba in... I guess it was a 63rd minute, they started running all over us. Having that extra body in midfield who was a progressive force with the ball gave us more to think about than we could handle. And our front line looked gassed, and we couldn't break out the same way we were doing. We were getting kind of mixed up in defense. Pogba was really just moving all over the pitch. I mean, the penalty that he won, you know, he was... started from a central midfield place. He was in the right wing spot, having broken past Ben Davis and was isolated on Eric Dier on the touchline. Like, you know, they were just sort of pulling us all out of shape. And,
well, and we that had... pass he made to, was it Rashford or Martial right before he went on? I think it was Rashford. Was ridiculous. It's amazing to have someone, you know, on the bench, a really technically talented midfielder that you can bring on. And it would be cool if we could have done something like that.
Well, I think in a way we kind of did. Like, I don't think United sort of... They had a sort of period of ascendancy that sort of, I guess, kind of culminated in that goal. But at the same time, like, I think once Lo Celso came on, like, you know, I think we kind of... I don't want to say neutralized United's control, but we evened it out. I mean, you know, I think the issue, which, you know, I'm sure we'll get into more... is that, you know, this team looked gassed, which is understandable, I mean, given that they haven't played football and a lot of people are coming off of injuries. But, you know, we left, like, three subs on the bench, and I don't understand, like, okay, let's say for the sake of argument, Ndombele's hurt, which, you know, I'm not sure I believe that he can't play 15 minutes, but let's just say he is. You know, we can throw on Sessegnon. I mean, there's other players that we can bring on to, like, at least just run at United and, you know... take up space, right? And, you know, like, just put pressure on United to, you know, ease off the pressure on our defense. And, you know, it's, I mean, it's a shame, like you said, Ben, because even when it was all going wrong, I don't think it was like a total disaster, and it was still something we largely had control over. Frankly, I think United was lucky to come out of this match with a point, given that they got a very soft penalty.
They got two very soft penalties.
Yeah, well, they only
one of them had to come back.
But they were, I thought they were lucky to get that penalty. And if it's, you know, it's if it's some fucking donkey from their academy, they probably don't get that penalty, but it's Pogba, so you know, they do. But it's, yeah, it's just, you know, it's, it sucks, cuz, you know, we, it probably wasn't as good a performance as we would have liked to have seen, but it's better than we've been watching for a while. And I think it was probably good enough to take a point off, take 3 points off United, and it's sort of a shame we weren't able to do that.
Yeah, it's tough. Cause, like, so tactically, you know, we did respond with two subs. We brought on Lo Celso and Jedson about 10 minutes after Pogba came on, and they started to disrupt us. And Lo Celso did a lot to settle us down. Jedson, I'm still not sure what he does or what he gives us or why he exists.
Fresh legs is the best answer I can come up
right,
with.
Right, he was like... there. But the problem is, like, the tired legs we took off were Lamella and Bergwijn, who I thought were...
very
standout
good, yeah,
performers in the first half, even if they weren't, like, creating a ton and in the final third, they were just really good at both pressing and relieving pressure and, like, letting us play in the opposition half. And meanwhile, Harry Kane stayed out there for 90 minutes, and boy, that guy couldn't find the box with a map and a flashlight. He was just jogging around.
That
he had, like,
dude,
10 passes all match. He just offered nothing. And it was just like, you could make a change. You could put Sonny up top and bring somebody else on. You know, I mean, there were a lot of options. I mean, on our bench, we had Ndombele and Sessegnon, who are both more attacking players. But even if you don't want to bring on another attacker, like, fine. Bring on Toby, shove Dier in midfield, solidify that a little bit, and then move some of those up, those midfielders you can a little even, further forward. Like, you could do just so many
things. Yeah, you could throw on Sessegnon and just have him, like, run around up top, like, pull an old Harry Redknapp. Like, all you're there to do is occupy their space and keep them honest. Like, you know, at that point in the match, it's like, especially now, given that, like, understandably, these teams are going to be tired, and, you know, we probably need to, you know, there's some value in having just fresh legs on the pitch.
Yeah, and it drives me nuts because, I mean, Jose's post-match press conference was like, you know, guys are tired, which of course they are, but that's why we have five subs. But then he was like, but I didn't have anybody I could bring on. And it's just like, fuck you. Just absolutely fuck you. Like, you don't even need to be like a tactical innovative genius here. Just bring on some fresh legs because the legs you have are tired and they're going to get sloppy and they're going to not track back and they're going to leave, you know, spaces in behind. You're going to leave Eric Dier isolated against Paul Pogba in the box. Like, these are just easy fixes that it's infuriating to see him not do.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, to say that you didn't have any way to bring on, it's just like, well, you set up the bench. Like, you got to pick the guys that go there. So if you picked, you know, all these guys, what was it? Do we have, how many subs do we have now? 9?
Yeah, even if there's a guy or two.
If you pick 7 other guys that all are injured or can't play, or you see no tactical value in bringing them on, why not just have a 2?
Yeah, even like, if, let's say for the sake of argument, Ndombele is just a emergency, like, I'm going to use him in the next game, I'm not using him in this game unless it's just a total fucking crisis, you still have 6 other guys on the bench. Like,
well, and the fact is after they equalized, it became a fucking crisis. Mm-hmm. Like, we controlled mostly that game, and it's now 80 minutes gone, it's 1-1. Go for a fucking winner, you fucking coward.
Well, and it's like, I don't know about you guys, but it was killing me to watch, like, Jedson and Lo Celso, like, interchanging on the right, because it's just clearly, like, Jedson is just not up to what Lo Celso can do, and you could just see Lo Celso trying to drag shit out of him, and Jedson's just doing that, like, sort of dribble up the pitch, nowhere to go, you know, like, give it back, and it's just not going, and nothing's going anywhere, and I don't want to, like, look, I'm not saying Jedson, whatever, but... Jedson, I'm not saying that, like, I'm not completely ready to give up on that guy, but it sure didn't seem like he was sort of up to what we needed in this match.
Well, and then, you know, look, the thing is, like, you look at the relative strengths of the bench and, like, look at the players that United brought on. I mean, they bring on Matic, who, okay, maybe past his prime, but, you know, they bring on Matic, Greenwood, Ighalo, Pogba, and Eric Bailly, and they left Lingard and Juan Mata on the bench. And, like, whatever your thoughts about some of those people, like, I don't know, Jesse Lingard still being, like, a great prospect despite being 33 years old. You know, whatever your thoughts about them.
This is his year, Brian. This is his year.
Obviously, that's a deeper and more talented bench than kind of what we had available to us. And now, look, we've got Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen on our bench. And I understand that, like, maybe defensive substitute wasn't what you were looking for. But just, like, we have a dearth of attacking options. And, I mean, that's, like, a systemic thing that I know we've talked about on this show before. Like, we should have had a backup striker for years, and we just didn't, and we don't. But we don't even now have really additional attacking midfielders. When, you know, I don't know, back in January, that kind of felt like an area where we had a ton of players. Because I guess we thought, you know, Lo Celso could play as an attacking mid. You had Christian Eriksen still at that time. And now it's just we didn't really have anything. And so, like, our best option was to bring on Lo Celso playing in a deeper role. And Jedson, who is nominally a central midfielder, and play him on the left wing for whatever reason. Like, it just didn't make any sense. And then,
I don't even know what Jedson nominally is. Like, can we nominally call him the central midfielder? Like, yeah. I think the best game he's played for us has been as a winger when he's just been, like, running at guys late in the match. But I don't even know if he's good at that.
Yeah, energy is, like, the only thing I can see that he brings to the table. Like, and that's, again, that's a small sample size. It's probably not fair to him, but, like,
The thing about him is, like, I haven't seen him do anything that I've felt was, like, a net positive in a Spurs shirt yet. And that's not to say that he's a good or a bad loan signing, or that he, you know, is a waste of minutes on the pitch or whatever. But like Ben said, I don't know what he is. I have no concept of what his best position is. I have no concept of, you know, what his actual skills are. I've kind of got a feeling that his skills aren't related to finishing or getting in the box or getting shots. But other than that, I don't know anything about it. But all that aside, I really do think the biggest issue for Spurs was the absolute, complete, and utter total disappearance of Harry Kane. You know,
yeah.
I think that Mourinho consistently has shown that his systems are predicated upon a good center forward. And he has consistently had good center forwards. Like, even at the Inter team, he had Milito. And
he
while
had
he was. Say what?
He had Milito and Samuel Eto'o. Like,
and Eto'o, yeah, that's right. So, but I mean, you know, in Milito's case, he's not like. You wouldn't have, at that time, you wouldn't have considered him like one of the 10 or 20 best.
No, he hadn't even played for a big team. He hadn't even played for a big team in Italy before he got to that Inter team, I think.
Right. But he still had, if my recollection serves, a very good season in that year that they won the treble.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. He was a guy who always scored goals without being particularly impressive.
But you know, like, his teams have had big, strong guys that are capable of getting into the box, that are capable of holding up the ball, that bring in the players around them, that operate in ways that distract other central defenders, that make runs that pull central defenders out of position. And Harry Kane had, at the beginning of the season and at the beginning of the Mourinho run, done some of those things, and he was just doing none of that.
And it's, look, if we're going to be fair, maybe he's rusty. Like, he might be rustier than most. A lot of players looked rusty on that game. Maybe this was just a bad case of it because he's really coming off a layoff. What I don't get is, like, Brian, you sort of were just sort of talking about it, is, like, Mourinho's worked with a lot of good center forwards. And, you know, all the stuff that Kane did, it's not like Kane was, like, a speedy, you know, it's not like he was a speed merchant or anything. Like, he's still got good instincts about certain things. And it's like, it's frustrating to me that, like, they had all this time, and maybe this is down to Kane and not Mourinho, but, like, you'd think there would have come up with, like, okay, these are the things you need to do now, Harry, because, like, you know, if you're going to be effective, like, you know, don't do all this tracking back, sit in the box, or, you know, whatever. And it just seemed like Harry was just sort of running around and not really, you know, doing lots of running, and but it wasn't really doing anything, and it wasn't really...
I didn't even think he was doing a lot of running. He was doing a lot of, like, jogging, and then... Even,
okay,
like,
moving around at a slightly accelerated pace.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, but this is not new. Like,
it's not, you're right.
This is what Harry Kane does, is the current iteration of Harry Kane is a guy who he does this jog press across the front line, and then he kind of lives there, like, just across the halfway line, and that's where all his touches happen, is just past the halfway line in early transitional possession. You know, he'll touch it a couple times, move the ball along, but he never catches back up with play and finds himself in the box. Like, he did not touch the ball in the box the entire match, not once. And, like, you're a striker, that's your only job. And I think he recognizes that his, like, mobility is limited and whatever, and he wants to be involved, and so he decides to make that involvement happen deeper in the play and, you know, sit in the center circle so he can touch the ball a couple times and move things along. But if you're only capable of moving a little bit and touching the ball a little bit, the most effective place for Harry Kane to be is right in and around the box.
Yep, he should be hanging in the final third.
Failures, like, he can still whack the fucking ball, and he can still put the ball on target. And so if he was standing in or near the box and we got him the ball, like, I still trust Harry Kane to whack the shit out of it and put it in the corner and maybe score. But he doesn't even give himself the opportunity to do that anymore because his positioning is just atrocious. And that's the kind of thing that, like, it's bad about Harry, but it's fucking bad about Jose, who is the manager, and again has this, like you said, Brian, this striker dependent system. You need this guy up there, like, how are you not screaming at him and telling him, like, you do not leave 5 yeah. yards away from, like, the
final third. You're like, that's your ass. Home.
You stay there, and when the ball comes to you, you make shit happen. And that's it. That's your job. Because if that's all he seems to be capable of doing is those little bursts. And, like, he had some, like, really, really beautiful expansive passes, or, like, you know, he'd shake a defender and move the ball on nicely. Like, when he did touch the ball, it was often very effective. It's just he's touching the ball in the completely wrong areas of the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, he had one nice pass to Spring Sun, but he made it from, like, I don't know, inside our own half. You know, it's just, you know, and the thing about him is now he's not even really doing, you know, a good job of being a decoy in terms of occupying defenders or making runs to pull other people to pull open space for other people. I mean, so often in attacking moves, we saw him trailing so far behind the play, and not even like in a strategic way, just like not able to catch up with play. We saw, you know, players like Eric Lamella and, you know, Serge Aurier make runs that basically passed Harry Kane by on multiple occasions. And got those players into the box, and like Ben said, that is where Harry Kane's innate finishing ability is most valuable to the team. That is the spot where his technical abilities are most useful to us, and he's not doing that, and then we don't have another option to really play that role in the way that Jose probably ideally would like this team to function, and. I think honestly, if we're going to say something about Mourinho's management, the worst two things that he did in this game were not using any of those additional subs, and then not using one of those subs on Harry Kane. Like, to leave him out there in the state that he was in for, you know, the full 90 minutes when he was gassed at about 35. I mean, it's like negligent, like it's just insane that Harry Kane. We Mourinho had a press conference earlier in the week where he said, "I don't know if Harry Kane has 30. I don't know if he's 45. I don't know if he has 60. You know, we'll see." And then that he saw that work product and was like, "No, yeah, 90 minutes. That seems right."
I mean, I'm not gonna hold like Mourinho's press conference about Harry Kane against him, because like he should be in there gassing up Harry Kane, but.
Sure.
At the same time, like, yeah, why is Harry Kane? And the thing that's, like, frustrating, and I know that we're dealing with, you know, this COVID team, and, like, Bergvine had to come off, and Mora had a pregame knock, but it's not like Spurs don't have guys they can throw up top to, like, especially if it's just to do a job. Like, you know, like, you can move Son over there. It's like, that's not crazy. That's not insane. You know, these are easy fixes, or at least, like, you know, we're not talking about wild tactical innovations here. We're talking about, like, making a few more subs, maybe putting Harry Kane in the final third. And I guess that's what, and maybe this is more complicated than any of us can realize without being on the training ground, but it sure doesn't seem that way. And I think that's what I find so sort of perplexing, I mean, and
just
infuriating.
Not,
yeah. I mean, not complicated. Again, like, I don't know exactly what Harry Kane's fitness is, but, like, yeah, like you said, Ben, it's like, this seems pretty simple, and that's what's so infuriating about it.
You know, like, we know Son can play striker. I don't know what's wrong with Troy Parrott, but he wasn't even on the bench.
That I'm more sympathetic to, but whatever.
We've seen Lamella play a false nine. Like, there's not options, but I'm
well, especially for, like, 15 minutes at the end of a match. Like, that's all we need. Like, go occupy United. Like,
I'm watching again Bergvine's goal, and he picks up the ball, like, 5 yards into their half, and Harry Kane is like a half step behind him, and a actual striker would make that bursting run past him to draw defenders off and open up space and whatever, but Harry never breaks out of a jog, and by the end of the play he's like a full yard and a half behind Bergwijn, just offering nothing, but like he starts the play basically level with him, and he never ever becomes a viable option at any point in that attack. Luckily, Bergvine is capable of just running it himself and whacking the shit out of the ball, but, you know, this is, like, one of the few times that you see Harry Kane at, like, kind of the point of an attack, and even then, he just can't be asked to get. He never makes it inside the box by the end of the play, and it's just like that's a problem, and like it is on the manager to recognize that problem and do something about it.
So two things about that. Like, first of all, like Kane, the run Kane should make there is the run towards Lindelof. To prevent Lindelof from coming across and almost getting a block in. Like that's clearly the run you take as a striker to, you know, offer yourself as an option to pass and prevent that central defender from coming over. But the other thing, and the more important thing, is that that's an awesome goal. Like that's a great job by Bergwijn. Like the way he runs at Harry Maguire and forces Maguire to turn his hips and then basically just be unable to do so was perfect. And then, you know, look, the shot wasn't amazing. He didn't hit a corner, but he hit it hard enough that De Gea couldn't do anything with it. And, Bergwijn has been probably our best player of the last, I don't know, five matches. He's been pretty good.
I think Son, if you go back before the break, but he's real, real good. I mean, he is quite the find.
I mean, he scored what was it? Like 3 goals in his last 3 starts.
He's got 3 goals in 6 games.
Yeah. So
and they're not all full games.
He's been good. I don't think I had much in the way of expectations for him when he signed. I can't, you know, profess to have watched much of him play in the Eredivisie. But he's been good, better than advertised. I think. I mean, he's direct. He's very strong. He's been excellent at, you know, maintaining possession. He doesn't give the ball away a lot. He makes excellent decisions in terms of, you know, where with his positioning and the runs that he does choose to make. I think he's been a really good addition. And with him and Son on opposite wings from each other, I think that can make us really dangerous.
Yeah, I love him. I'm so excited that he's here. And, like, you can squint and see, like, there's a future here where, you know, we got defensive midfielder Lo Celso and Ndombele, Son and Bergwijn on the wings, and a real striker or Harry Kane figuring out how to play soccer again. Like, that's a dangerous front six.
That's a really dangerous front six.
We need that defensive midfielder. We need Ndombele to be fit. We need Harry Kane to be Harry Kane. And if not, we need the club to recognize that and sign another striker. And those are 3 things that I'm not confident are going to happen.
I mean, but it's still exciting to watch him play. I mean, in some ways it feels like watching a super physical version of Aaron Lennon in terms of, like, he takes the ball, he starts running at guys, but he starts knocking people over. I mean, it was funny watching.
And he's direct.
Yeah.
He's not just, like, going to the touchline trying to whip it across. Like, he moves towards goal.
Yep.
And is going to make shit happen on the way.
But it was on that goal, too. Like, he takes that ball in and he's just knocking, you know, United defenders, because, I mean, that ref was letting, I mean, that's part of why I got so salty about that stupid penalty he gave, was like, I mean, that ref was letting both teams just get away with murder all match. And they're just trying to absolutely kill Big Steve. And he's just shrugging him off until he finally takes that amazing shot. And it's just, he's real, real good.
Yeah, I'm so glad.
And that's actually that's one of the weird things that I think. And I think he is in, like, the upper percentiles of a successful version of that. But I think that's one of the things that, you know, if there's a positive to losing Pochettino, it's Daniel Levy's weird, like, sort of bargain bin European shopping sales. Like, you know, like, this is the kind of thing that we hadn't been getting for a while. I mean, we got Lucas Moura a few summers ago, but, like, Levy sort of taking a flyer on a guy and it sort of occasionally working out. I mean, obviously it worked out a lot more in the sort of late 2000s and early 2010s, but, you know, this is, I think, where Daniel Levy kind of excels, picking up players like that. And it's kind of nice. I hope we see more of that. You know, it looks like we might see that in defensive midfield. I don't know. Like, it's nice to see us at least picking up players like him again.
Speaking of defensive midfield, how nice was it to have Moussa Sissoko back?
Yeah, that's really weird. I don't know if it's just our standards got so low while he was out, or he's actually playing well now, but it ain't what it used to be.
It's just, well, like, I think the thing is that Musa Sissoko has one job and he's figured it out, and his job is just to do all the defensive stuff that Serge Aurier doesn't want to do. And, like, the two of them, like, they seem to have a rapport, and, like, they, you know, I just think, like, on the field, they both know what the other's doing. And so, like, that side of the pitch basically works because Aurier does all his crazy attacking stuff, and then Musa Sissoko basically just covers the right side of that pitch, tackles when Aurier's still caught up with the field, basically becomes the de facto right back most of the time when we're having to track back. And I think he does a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, I mean, he was also good in that defensive midfield space, like not even shifting over, which I agree he does really well, but just generally mopping up in front of the back line. He had such a very limited responsibilities this game. It was just break shit, move the ball simply, and that's it. We didn't see like those classic Musa Sissoko runs out of midfield where he dribbles for like, you know, 30 yards and then can't find a pass. Like, he really just didn't do that. He was given a task and he stuck to it, and he did it very well.
It was kind of like early Eric Dier, when Eric Dier and Kyle Walker were kind of playing on that same side of the field, and Walker would get pushed way far up the right side, and then Dier would basically drop back to essentially make it a back three. And now Sissoko did have a little more license to get forward, and of course he doesn't have quite the passing range that Dier does. But it actually worked, and you could see kind of what Mourinho is looking for in terms of how his team is going to take shape when it's defending in a low block or when we are moving forward on the counterattack. And you never really saw that work as well when Sissoko wasn't there. I don't think we saw that at any point since Mourinho took over. The whole right side of the team was basically just kind of a crapshoot, like whether Aurier was going to get back to defend or not.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable. I mean, I think, you know, as the game wore on and we saw tired legs happen, Musa Sissoko was still everywhere.
Musa Sissoko never gets tired.
He's just a remarkable athlete. And, you know, to leverage that and say, yeah, just run around and just mop shit up is just a much better use of his skill set, limited as it is, than saying, you know, just run forward all day long and hope that by the 85th minute, other people will be tired enough that you can actually, like, affect something in the box. The position that he was playing against United, I thought, was just a perfect use of his talents and his athleticism. I was super impressed with a guy who I am notoriously unimpressed by.
And like you said, I think overall, in terms of just like fitness, he appeared to be the man in the best shape on the pitch. Like, if you had told me they needed to play another 60 minutes of that game, Musa Sissoko would have been the only one that was still running by the end of it. Like,
yeah, that's what they should do. They should make the game 60 minutes longer, and Musa Sissoko will win them all for us.
I don't know. There are some players with obvious deficits who you wonder why the manager loves them so much. I don't think I've ever wondered that about Musa Sissoko. He's had a lot of problems over the years, but like, I think you understand why managers love him so much, because like you said, that guy could play like two games in a day. I mean, he just can run around all day, and it's impressive to watch. And I think
the tackle he made on, who was it? Was it Greenwood? I don't remember who he tackled, but the tackle he made was to stop a United counterattack, where it was just basically he had to make it or nothing was gonna or we were in big trouble. Like, it was inch perfect, and it was I mean, he's so good sometimes, and I just wish he would channel all of his like, you know, ever present energy into like actual good football things more often.
Yeah, I mean, he's so good at such a limited amount of things, and it's very hard to restrict his role to just doing those things. You know, even when you're like, oh, just play defense, and then he gives a handball away at 30 seconds into a Champions League.
Well, if there's anyone who can turn a physical specimen into a defensive destroyer, it's probably Mourinho.
Yeah. So, yeah, I want to call out, while we're on the subject of players who were very surprisingly excellent, I would say also Eric Dier, penalty aside, I thought had a fantastic game. Probably the best game I've ever seen him play at center back. And Ben Davis, I thought, was immaculate. And Daniel James sucks, but Daniel James is fast as shit. And Ben Davis is not. And I could not believe how well he marshaled that area of the pitch against a guy who should have just ran him into the ground 10 minutes in.
Well, Davis was fighting an injury for most of the year, wasn't he? Like, he's another guy who probably really benefited from the time off, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Dier, too.
Yeah, well, Dier's been fighting injuries for years now. But, you know, I was surprised. I agree with you, Ben. Dier's always someone I've been a little more skeptical at as a center back. Like, I don't think he's always played super well there, but he had a really good game.
And I agree with Ben. I think Ben Davis was the one that stood out to me more so than Dier. Not that Dier was bad or anything, but this was kind of the Ben Davis that I think I thought we would see under Mourinho. Like, we would see him deployed as this, you know, less as a fullback, but more as a third center back who would, you know, step inside and play incisive passes, but wouldn't really step forward, you know, too much. It's sort of like the way Mourinho utilized Azpilicueta at Chelsea. And I thought he played that role well. I mean, I you know, like I said, I thought that this was a role that he could do well when you said Mourinho was hired. Like, I think if you go back and listen to when we talk about Mourinho getting hired, who we thought would excel under him, I think we flagged Ben Davis. And this was just an example of healthy Ben Davis, comfortable in the tactical setup, making a good performance in the role that he was assigned. And so I think, I'm hopeful that, you know, that something that can continue, because really, Mourinho is the type of manager who has a lot of uses for Ben Davis. And we've seen him in the past, Ben Davis specifically, we've seen him be able to do some of those things of sort of secondary center back, or I guess he'd be a third center back, but like, and also support in the midfield. He is good on the ball. He is a good passer. He's not a good dribbler. He's not a great crosser, but he can make incisive through balls. He can make sure that the ball gets to playmakers in dangerous areas. He can support an attack without actually being like one of the guys that makes the break.
Yeah, I mean, I think his best skill is probably progressive passing, and he's just too slow to utilize it in a way that is super effective, because he can't play defense and do that as often as he needs to. He's like slower Trippier, I think. Which is bleak.
That is a really depressing thought, Ben. I'm not gonna lie.
Like, but it's like, you know, again, it's like you have a guy with like some unique skill sets that are very mismatched and are not super like holistic of what you want in a fullback, but you have to make a choice in how you want to maximize those talents. And I think, again, this was a game that he was deployed to his best effect, and he did his job really well.
Well, I think especially when you consider that you have Ore on the other side, who has like license to do basically whatever he wants up and down the right flank, it makes sense to have someone who is, you know, whose role is more sharply defined in terms of, look, don't stray too far forward. And Davis is very comfortable in that. I don't think he seems to have any desire to get to the touchline and put in a cross, and so he does just fine.
Well, this is always where I think Davies got in trouble under Pochettino, which was, hey, go run up the field like Danny Rose, where it's sort of like, you know, he needs, as good as he is at progressive passing, he needs to engage in a little more discretion than, you know, Serge Aurier might, for obvious reasons.
And the thing is, I think Pochettino also used him well, because I think the best we'd ever seen Ben Davis before this was that season, I can't remember which year it was, but he started off with like 3 goals and 6 assists, like just to kick the season off. We trusted that we had a real midfield behind him and a strong defense behind him, that it was okay if he got kind of trippiered out of position because the damage he was doing in the final third was worth it. But again, it's a choice you have to make with a guy like that, because the modern fullback job requires a lot of coverage, and he, like Trippier, cannot do both. And unless you have a system behind him to cover for his forays forward, you're going to get yourself into trouble. And I think finding that balance on either end of the pitch is just crucial to getting the best out of a guy like that. We went the other way and made him conservative and play defense, and he finally looked kind of fit enough to do that job. I have nothing but good things to say about his performance.
Did it feel like Mourinho had done something different or learned some lessons, or was it just a matter of like he had a more of a healthy team to work with here?
Little column A, little column B.
Yeah, because that also feels like he definitively did not learn lessons, as we talked about earlier, and all the ways that the team was let down by him and the players. So.
Yeah, but it feels like in some ways he learned more. I mean, I don't know. Who knows what's fucking going on with Ndombele and some of these other things, but, like, I don't know. It feels like he more just didn't learn the lessons of, like, well, because of this pandemic, you get to do these things with a mash, and as opposed right. to how he was deploying his team.
To see Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, like, fucking outmanage Jose Mourinho.
Well, and it's not just outmanage Mourinho. Mourinho, who has a reputation for being like maybe the most cynical manager in Europe, and he's not prepared to take advantage of a match with 5 substitutes in it. Like I don't know. That's a little surprising to me.
Right. This is a guy who at Chelsea, like, notoriously was famous for making like 3 halftime subs every now and again when shit wasn't going his way. Like, proactive substitutions was never a knock on Jose's resume. There are many, many failures that he has had over the years, but that was never one of them. And so to see him just completely whiff on this, like, you have the ability to change out half your outfield players. That's unbelievable, given how tired and unfit everybody is right now. And even in normal times, that would be an amazing boon. But especially now, and to just see him not take advantage of that is just shocking to me.
So, I mean, do you think we're going to see... What do you think a team looks like if, like, let's say Lo Celso gets healthy, which who knows how long will take, and, I don't know, Mourinho decides he's actually going to use Ndombele. I mean, do you think we're going to see a Spurs team with an actual midfield against West Ham? I don't know why I'm asking this question, but I would like to see a Spurs team with a functional midfield against West Ham.
I mean, why would we start now, honestly? It's going to be weird if Ndombele doesn't start. Like, if you didn't play him in this last match and the excuse is that he was injured, then obviously you were saving him for this game, right? Like, that has to be what it is, so...
Yeah, the argument I think I saw, like, in what seemed to me to be that he was, like, advancing, that's being leaked to the press is... Mourinho was going to play more defensive counterattacking style and didn't suit Ndombele, which I am a little skeptical of that, and he wanted to save him for a match where we're going to try and more, assert ourselves more, which if that's not fucking West Ham, like, I don't know who it's going to be.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see like an Ndombele Sissoko midfield. I also wouldn't be super surprised. Excuse me. I wouldn't be super surprised to see Sissoko and Winks again, even though both played 90 minutes.
I don't know if we're gonna use
love that midfield.
Look. One of the things we've been wanting is Spurs to buy a defensive midfielder to do all the dirty work, so Lo Celso and Ndombele can go ball out. Like, if Sissoko is willing to do some dirty work, like, I don't know. This seems to be a bit of serendipity if we can get him to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, you know, the specific context of Sissoko being deployed in that role against Man U, it was very deep, very limited, and a more progressive, like, where we are on the ball more and controlling things, and he has, you know, he has to do the same job but starting at like the center circle and not like 5 yards past the 18 yard box. Can he do it? Is he positionally intelligent enough to break up counters the right way? I don't know. We haven't really gotten to see
well,
that.
You know what?
But boy, if we could.
Now's the time to find out. Like, this is the part of the season. Maybe not against West Ham, but like certainly before the season's over. I mean, I don't know. Maybe we'll be in it. I mean, we only need to maybe qualify for fifth to make a Champions League spot this year. But like, you know, I would like to figure this out before we go start spending money on defensive midfielders. I think we probably still need to buy one, even if it does work out. But
yeah, I mean, I think honestly, at this point, the big question mark is, are we going to realize Harry Kane's a problem? And is that going to be because we realize he's a problem, so we don't play him, or we play him for the rest of the season and he plays like this for the next 8 games and it's bad?
I mean, I don't see, like, you're even starting to see English journalists write about how Harry Kane's a problem. And that's like, I don't think I've ever seen that before. And they're still giving him an enormous benefit of the doubt, but I just don't understand how you can look at it. Maybe, and you know, look, I don't blame Spurs necessarily. Like, if you're a decision maker at Spurs, if your reaction to this is we have to figure out a way to get the best out of Harry Kane, but they need to start doing something different with Harry Kane if they're not going to just replace him. Like, we can't just keep doing this, like, and hoping he finds his form. And again, maybe some of this was just rust. Maybe he's going to be a better player in a week once he gets a game or two under his legs. But I suspect that's not all it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have the tools to solve our midfield. Like, as I think Harry Winks, again, is another guy who has a limited skill set. He does what he does. He's a defensive non-entity, and that's a problem. But we saw against Man U, we can muddle through with that midfield and not get super exposed.
I mean, we muddled through a whole season with that midfield before.
Yeah, we didn't.
But I get what you're saying, Ben. There's a way to keep this respectable for the rest of the year, in theory, within our with what we have on our roster.
I mean, like, we look at this team and, like, all right, the problem areas are central midfield, our fullbacks, and Harry Kane. I think the attacking band is solid. The defense is, you know, it lacks depth. But again, if we can get Eric Dier playing like this as a center back, Davinson Sanchez also had a very good game. We know what Toby's capable of. You know, Jan's a little on the way out, but that's fine. That's still 3 good center backs, 3.5 center backs. You know, the fullbacks looked good against United. I don't want to say that's problem solved, but it might be. You know, even if the midfield of Winks and Sissoko isn't great, we know we have options there to make it better. The thing that we don't really have an answer for right now is where are goals coming from?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, if this team was a little more ruthless, we do have an answer for that, and that's stick Son up top. I mean, There is an on-team solution to this.
Yeah, I mean, Son or even Lucas, like, I don't care, but I am not... I mean, it felt like we were playing with 10 men with Harry Kane up top. And I just don't know how we fix that problem. Like, do we just spend the next 8 games running Kane out, hoping he gets better? Or do we be proactive and say, he's done, it's time for Lucas? I just can't see that ever happening.
I mean, look, I can see us maybe getting more ruthless in terms of subbing Kane, but yeah, I don't see us like, all right, Harry, time to sit. Like, I don't know. I mean, Mourinho, like, that was the thing. I mean, Pochettino had a lot of juice by the time he left. Mourinho's, like, been a big manager of big personalities. Like, you know, if this club didn't have the ability to say no to Harry Kane before, I mean, Mourinho should certainly have that ability. And, you know, I don't know. I have no faith he's going to exercise it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody wants to acknowledge it. I think everybody's like, well, Harry Kane's Harry Kane, and if we just give him some time, he's going
to
be good again.
Well, let's be honest, man. Michael wants to acknowledge it, but other than him.
I mean, in the actual structure of the Tottenham Hotspur football club, I don't know the odd answer for this.
No, and it's tough, because you had this, like, Tottenham Hotspur produced out of their own academy, like, one of the best players in the world. Certainly a guy who for 3 years was in the conversation of best striker in the world, at least behind, like, Messi and Ronaldo. And, like, you know, and then he had a very gradual set of injuries, and it sort of was this dumb thing where it sort of happened just slow enough where it wasn't, like, you know, it's not like, you know, at least Torres had the one big injury that kind of, like, fucked him up, and there was, like, a very sort of clear dividing line between when he was good and when he was much more mediocre, and, like, Harry Kane didn't have that, so Harry Kane had several injuries that led to it, but even then, like, you know, it's like, it sucks seeing Kane as sort of a shell of himself, especially because it's especially perplexing because, you know, without really, before you dig into it, you know, Kane was never a speed merchant, he was never super powerful, you know, he was a guy who just had smart movement, and there's this part of your brain that's like, okay, even with the injuries, he was never like, he never moved around that much before. What's fucking him up now? And obviously something's taken just enough of the edge off to be a problem, but it's like, it just sucks to watch.
Sure gonna be fun to spend no money on a striker this summer, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I just hope we pick league clean and get some bargain basement deals, but
you know. I think our best chance, honestly, is we hit a Troy Parrott jackpot and we solve Harry Kane with Harry Kane 2.0.
Yeah, hopefully Troy Parrott doesn't
seems like a real toolbox.
I think Troy Parrott's going to put his dick online too many times for us to really find that out. But here's hoping.
Using his gold plated iPhone or whatever the fuck.
I'm not discounting any of that. I'm just saying we're not buying a striker.
So no.
Our best chance of replacing Harry Kane is happening to have Harry Kane 2.0 in our academy again.
All that's going to happen this summer is, like, I think we're going to spend some money, but it's going to be on, like, a Kia midfielder and a, you know, like a Honda fullback, like, very just, like, you know, very good uses of our money, very respectable spends that aren't a lot but are, give us a solid return.
That sounds,
I mean, it could be nice. Like, I would take reliable midfielders. I would take a reliable defensive mid. I'd take reliable fullbacks. But, yeah, it'd be nice to have a striker who could score goals again.
Let's talk a little bit about transfer rumors, because we've got one.
We got one that looks like a fait accompli. I mean, I know we've said that before as Tottenham fans, but, I mean,
but Jeremiel Højbjerg from Southampton looks pretty well like it's happening.
I mean, it's been rumored. It has been so heavily rumored that Southampton stripped him of the captaincy. So I don't know. I can't say I've paid a ton of attention to him over the years. But you look at his sort of heat maps and stuff, and his, like, you know, all this, like, sort of his actions across the field. I mean, he certainly looks like an all-action defensive midfielder who's mobile and gets around. And Jesus Christ, could we use one of those? So if we can get someone to do the dirty work behind some real midfielders, like, ooh, that could be real pretty.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's like a 7 out of 10 at a lot of things. He puts himself about really well. He tackles well. He reads the game well. He's a decent passer. He's not an elite anything. You know, he's not like a Conte or even a Pique Wanyama. But he's a guy who can do a job running around midfield, keeping things tight. And honestly, if Sissoko can't turn into that guy over the next 8 games, having that guy behind Lo Celso and Ndombele, like, I'm super happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of reminds me of, I mean, not to get too reductive, but, like, you know, putting Scott Parker behind Modric and all those guys, just sort of letting someone do all the dirty work so everybody else can show out. I mean,
yeah, and that's what we need. We have just a lot of, like, saucy fucking talent on this team. We just need some steel.
Yeah.
To, like, give them the platform to, like, go off.
But that's not what we really need on this team, Ben. What we need on this team is a monster. And fortunately, it seems like Son's best friend from the Korea team is coming from China to play fullback for us, and his name is Monster.
Yeah, what is his actual name? Who is this person?
I know very little. I saw this literally right as we were coming on the podcast, but his name, his nickname is Monster. It looks like his name is Kim Min-jae, or I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but he plays in China, so normally I would be more skeptical of a player playing in China, but I could be convinced that you know, it makes more sense for a Korean player to get recruited for the Chinese league than it would for, say, like Moussa Dembélé or whatever. But
I just googled Kim Min-jae and I came up with a South Korean actor. What?
There's two people, Ben, and they both have the same name. It's like Adam Smith.
Hey, our native, our Korean expert here is talking, Ben. Like, come on.
So this guy is 6'3", 190, and his name is Monster.
Yeah, that, yeah,
he's only 190. I don't know. Then I will. I'm
that guy is a deuce and a quarter easy.
Yeah.
Oh, this Monster is a hoss.
And yeah. I mean, look.
I know nothing, but I want it.
Yeah, our defense definitely needs, like, you know, a big old boy back there. Like, that'd be nice.
Get Grant Holt. Put him in a jersey. Have him play center back. I mean, he's a big boy. He is a big boy. I mean, I don't know. It would be nice to, you know, I don't expect any flashy signings like we got last summer, but that didn't work out. So let's go get some real rock solid, reliable, you know, dependable signings this summer and see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like kind of a summer where we need, like, volume signings, just kind of based on...
There's just so many holes.
Well, it's but it's like Ben said, we have some saucy motherfuckers on this team, and we need some dudes who can just do the scut work so they can show out. And it's
weird because, like, this team of, you know, 3 or 4 seasons ago, you had a bunch of just, like, guys who you could plug and play and be fine with, and you needed the flashy guys, the game changers, the guys that could come on and do crazy stuff. And now we have a handful of those guys, but we don't have, you know, the dependable, reliable ones. And so, you know, especially because this season is probably going to be kind of compressed, you know, with, in terms of, you know, short preseason, and let's figure out what they're going to do with some of the European qualification stuff. And, you know, I think this is summer where you need volume in to increase the size of your squad and give you more options available to you.
Yeah, bring on the Monster.
All right, guys. Well,
one fourth. I don't know. Whatever.
Oh, well, we're definitely getting rid of Juan Foyth.
I forgot about Juan Foyth.
So, yeah, it feels good to have Tottenham back. And by good, I mean it is a thing that has started to happen again. So I look forward to, hopefully, maybe later this week, we can talk about Tottenham's stunning victory against West Ham, truly inaugurating the Jose Mourinho era of success at Tottenham Hotspur. Probably we'll be talking about a game that none of us enjoyed very much. But we will be back now that Tottenham are back. Ben, do you have any final thoughts?
Nope.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Don't.
Okay, then. Brian, can people find you on the internet?
They can.
You want to follow through with that a little bit or not?
No,
really?
No. Okay. The people know. My only final thought is, if you're going out in public, people, please wear a mask. Like, Jesus Christ. just put something over your face, please. If you're not going to do it for yourself, do it for other people. Do it because, you know, you like your parents, your family, you like people on this podcast. Just do it because it's the fucking right thing to do.
You're doing so well, Brian. Now people aren't going to wear masks.
Yeah, I know.
What Brian said. Also, if you're shooting off fireworks, please stop shooting off fireworks. I'm getting really tired of it. Anyway, that's it. I have been your host, Greg, for Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow. Come on, you Spurs.